Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
As simple as we're working hand in hand with some of our local partners on the homeless situation, and quite frankly, we got a lot of money invested into it. Escambia County taxpayers have a lot of money invested into it, and then we find out that Orange Beach had brought one of their homeless over to our county, and we're just wondering why. Surely they have services over there.
Oh no. Escambia County Sheriff Chip Simmons goes on Facebook and says, "What gives, bro? We got a picture of you, your cruiser. You guys dropped somebody off here from Orange Beach at Waterfront Rescue Mission in Escambia County. But that's not cool. That's not what's supposed to happen. You're not supposed to just export people across state lines because they're causing, you know, vagrancy issues in your county. What is this, first blood? Come on now. Come on. Remember in the beginning, Sheriff Will Teedle, you know, right, they, Rambo's walking through, and the sheriff picks him up. Hey, what you doing? I'm just going south, and he drives him out to the edge of the city limits, and he says, hey, be on your way. And what does Rambo do? He turns around. He causes trouble. If you remember, he goes back into town, right? You don't remember? John!
What? Don't look at me like that.
What movies do you know?
Grogu and Mandalorian.
Lord, that doesn't count. That just happened. All right, anyway, so, you know, this is kind of like small town sheriff stuff or small town cop stuff. You know, well, let's just move them on across state lines. Let's move them on to Escambia County, see what they do with them.
Yeah, a uniformed deputy brought him in a marked cruiser car from Orange Beach and dropped him off at the Waterfront Rescue Mission and then left.
And that doesn't seem like a great thing.
Well, we had received word that this was taking place, but we just haven't been able to see it. We didn't see it because we weren't there whenever they dropped him off. In this particular case this morning, we saw a marked cruiser car, so naturally we had deputies in the area, so we went to check and say, hey, do you need some help? What are you doing so far out of your jurisdiction? Only to find out that they had dropped off one of their homeless in Escambia County, and specifically at the Waterfront Rescue Mission.
I got to imagine that conversation was interesting. You know, deputies in the area, in Orange Beach PD rolls up, and they're like, hey, bro, what you doing? nothing, just dropping off one of our homeless people in your county. Across state lines, what you doing? I don't know. So anyway,
again, we have been working very hard trying to address the situation that we have here, providing services, but also finding some other, other ways in which we can address the situation, working with our community partners. And we don't think it's right. We don't understand why the state of Alabama don't have their own resources. Why do you have to come to specifically to Escambia County? It's they surely have some service providers over there. Surely they have people that are willing to help the homeless without having to drive to another state, providing, again, transportation and then the money to get into the Waterfront Rescue Mission, but then driving back to Orange Beach.
Yeah, so, you know, surely you can handle this yourself without having to burden our charitable taxpayers and or supporters and givers. And, you know, why are you doing it this way?
What's going to happen with this individual, this homeless individual, is in a new city. He gets out of the Waterfront Rescue Mission. Where is he going to go now? He's going to be on the streets of Escambia County, and we're going to have to deal with him. And again, the taxpayers have put a lot of money into this. We have put a lot of money, a lot of resources into helping the homeless, and to have them just bring someone over here without letting us know. It's not cool.
Okay, so it's not cool. And then, you know, Channel 3 had done this interview with Chip Simmons, and so they called the mayor of Orange Beach and said, what gives? And he's like, what are you talking about?
So, did you ask them for a ride over?
Oh, sorry, excuse me, here we go.
I just didn't know that Compassion had state lines. I mean, you know, I applaud my officer for caring enough to want to help him. And that's all it was, trying to help.
Don't know nothing about it. Don't know why. What do you mean? Compassion's just got no state lines. I can't, what are you talking about? And then they put out a press release And the press release basically said the same thing. Like, you know, maybe the sheriff should have done a little bit of research before he goes spouting off. He says, well, if he were a real gentleman, he should have picked the phone up and called and asked what happened before he went on social media and played a tough guy. Talking about Chip Simmons. So it's just petty. He should have just picked the phone up and called. And then, you know, so I know nothing about it. It happened on multiple occasions with our police department. First I've heard of it. So unless he's got something to document that, I'd like to go back and find out what he's talking about. Because what did Chip say about that?
A couple of months ago, we had heard that this happened, and my chief deputy reached out to the Gulf Breeze, the Orange Beach Police Department, and asked them what was going on. And they were talking about, they mentioned something about the service provided. We told them that we did not think it was right at the time, but it didn't stop. They continued to do this. And at this time, we happened to see their cruiser car there. And when we asked what was going on, we quickly determined exactly what was taking place.
So this is neither the first time nor anything close to what we've been told. It's happening quite frequently.
Oh, we're hearing information that it happens a lot, dozens, if not hundreds of times, but not just from Orange Beach, from other areas as well. But after, there comes a time when you say enough is enough. Let's, you know, you cannot, you know, just abuse our tax dollars. We're trying to help our own out, and surely someone in Alabama can fund their own programs and without having to drive 30 miles, 45 minutes, an hour even into Escambia County.
Instead of treating Escambia County like your dumping ground.
Well, again, we've had information from a lot of people saying that they're brought in from other locations into Escambia County. And while we weren't wild about that, again, it's all about tax dollars. It's all about resources. We have a finite number of resources here in Escambia County. But we're not the clearinghouse for everyone's homeless. We don't think that it's right for someone in another state to bring their homeless into Escambia County and become a burden, theoretically, on the taxpayers here in Escambia County.
I mean, why stop at homeless people? Why, you know, if you catch somebody using or selling, bring them over to the other county. If you somebody's causing you graffiti or out breaking the law, speeding, you know, I don't know, anything, just dump them across state lines and let somebody else deal with it.
I think that there's got to be a better solution than that. And I just want people to know, that we're not going to allow you to just use Escambia County as a dumping ground for anyone that you don't particularly want in your neighborhoods.
So Chip Simmons' response to Tony Kennan saying, you know, you should have been a gentleman and picked up the phone. I still can't believe he said, well, if he was a real gentleman, he should have picked the phone up and called and asked what happened before he went on social media and played a tough guy. And so what, you know, and then Chip's like, sir, we have talked several times, and we've talked about this, and I guess talked with you, apparently. And Tony Kennan's like, nah.
I know nothing about it happening on multiplication with our police department. It's the first I've ever heard of it. So unless he's got something to document that, I'd be glad to go back and see what he's talking about. But this is not something we make a habit of.
And so their claim is we did bring him over here, but we brought him at their request. Like, he asked for us to take him over there. So we were just doing, you know, what he asked for. We had picked him up for vagrancy or whatever the original contact was. And he's like, well, can you just take me to Escambia County? They got that waterfront rescue mission over there 30 miles away. It's fantastic. I hear. Can you, you know, do me an Uber solid? Deputy, what's his name? And, you know, and I mean, we've never done this before. It's just a rare act of kindness by one of our officers. And then sheriff's like, no, this has been done a bunch. This is just the first time we've been in a position to actually catch you doing it. And we've talked about this before, and you deny that ever happened. So who's right? Who's got the right of the he said, he said? Because they're both guys. You can't say he said, she said. Okay, so he said, I don't know. Could be we've got body camera of us talking to him, of talking to the homeless guy.
So did you ask them for a ride over here? No? Okay.
And then second time.
But he, like, you didn't ask to come here originally. He offered it, and he suggested.
He offered me a ride if I had anywhere to go.
Offered me a ride. So it sounds like, what's the word I want? They're lying. It's what it sounds like. Now, I don't know whether the individual police officer, it's hard to make that allegation, but sounds like Chip is describing a problem that has been persistent rumored, alleged, without good evidence. We finally have evidence. And they're like, I don't know. It's the first time we've ever heard of anything like this. And, you know, we never talked to you about it. And Chip's like, really? We talked on the phone. And also, he says that you're lying about bringing him here. That, you know, I mean, you know, the homeless guy could be mistaken, too. That's always a possibility. You have to put that in. But, you know, that's where we stand. Who do you believe? I mean, I don't know who Tony Cannon is, but the idea that his first answer is to kind of gaslight and attack the character of Chip Simmons, you know, I know Chip a long time. I don't know this Tony Cannon. So there you go. That's your local fun drama. And by the way, it's a hard thing to really police, because what would the, if they were to do it this way, as in to kind of move their problem across state lines, it's not really illegal. It's just sort of rude, wrong, bad behavior. I mean, Chip did at one point say it's not cool. You know, I mean, that's kind of, you know, it. We, and by the way, Escambia County has a program where we try to, and you might say, well, this is a matter of how you perceive it. I think this program is really smart, because what we do is we find out where people are from, and we'll put them on a bus and pay for the bus fare for them to get back home. But it's the idea of getting them back to where they are in a network where they do have people that know them, as opposed to just dropping them off at the shelter and then paying for the shelter to take them for one night. And then after one night, what happens? You know, and they, I mean, you know, Waterfront's got rules about how long you can stay and all that kind of stuff. And he's just back out on the street here. And I mean, eventually hitchhiking his way over towards Orange Beach so he can get another free ride. I mean, I don't know. And how many times does it happen? Again, we don't know, because it's not like this is the sort of thing that you can track with a satellite. So that's the status of it right now. 521 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/free. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/free. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free. ZipRecruiter.com/free. ZipRecruiter.
Spring is a great time of the year for gardening, whether it's fertilizing the lawn, pruning, planting shrubs and summer blooming plants, and of course, tending to that vegetable garden. This is Mike Wiggins. If you've got spring gardening questions, we've got answers on the News Radio Garden Line every Tuesday morning at 9 on the Pensacola Expert Panel. And if you miss us on Tuesday, then catch the Encore Edition every Saturday morning at 9.
Sponsored by Pensacola Hardware and Blue Sky Landscaping.
Here are the News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 contest rules. You can win one prize per household per contest in any 30-day period, unless specified by individual contest rules. All prizes on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 are non-transferable, non-redeemable for cash, or exchangeable for any other prize. News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 prizes must be redeemed within a 30-day period of winning. For a complete list of rules, visit newsradio923.com.
Don't you hate it when you wake up and feel like you already missed something important? The Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay. Weekdays, 5 to 9. News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
Want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
We're going to dance. And have some fun.
And I think you're pretty sure that Colonel Nathan Jessup is a big D-Light fan. He might not even just have, that album, but he's got, you know, singles and the Japanese wax tracks. I mean, he's got
been to every single concert. You know that.
You want delight, You can't handle delay. 4-3. I don't know. It's just where my brain goes. Oh, have you seen the latest story about Joe Biden when he was president and he had that horrible, horrible debate performance with President Trump?
With the COVID, excuse me, with dealing with everything we have to do with, look, if we finally beat Medicare.
Yeah, I mean, it was really, that led to him dropping out. And then, do you remember all the gaslighting, all the, no, Joe's fine, everything's fine, nothing to see here. I don't know, he had medications or something, you know, like all the different things that got tried. Well, when he was talking to his wife, Jill, according to her, in a new memoir, I think is where this all started. She's on CBS Sunday Morning also. You know, first thing he said when they were walking off stage is, boy, I effed up. And she's like, yeah, you did. But then immediately that night, she pretended like everything was fine, which is kind of a weird, like, it's sort of what a wife slash politician is supposed to do at the same time. I'm always a big fan of being honest, admit your mistakes, you know, do it quickly. But, you know, and now we've got the whole retrospective thing where the Democrats are admitting that, oh, yeah, we handled all this badly. Well, Jill Biden now says, I mean, we actually have the audio of her saying that at the time, she thought maybe somebody had drugged him. She just didn't know what to think.
I had never, ever seen Joe like that before or since. What happened? I don't know what happened. I mean, as I watched it, I thought, oh, my God, he's having a stroke. And it scared me to death.
So I met Jill Biden one time. She was a very sweet lady. I've always had a very positive impression of her. I feel like this is still trying to gaslight us. He was totally fine. He was all alert. Remember all the staffers who'd come out and say he was totally alert in the briefing, in the situation room. You don't see what's going on behind closed doors. And then come to find out later, everybody's like, yeah, we all knew it was bad. Well, stop pretending. I mean, I understand as a wife, you're sitting there seeing this happen and you're worried about your husband and you can't believe it either. But what I thought at the time, and I think a lot of other people thought at the time, was not, wow, this is completely outside the range of the cognitive decline that he's been experiencing. What I thought was, well, this is maybe a more extreme version of what we've been watching happen for years, that his range of mental acuity had dramatically shifted. And it had been, you know, I'd followed him as a vice president. He was, you know, always a bit of a rambler, always a bit of a storyteller. That's fine. But, you know, there's a difference between somebody who, you know, thinks just fine, but they just go on. And then you saw him as president. You're like, oh, my God, what happened to this man? And then on the debate, what I thought was not this is completely out of character. I thought it's just a little bit at the worst end of the range that we've been seeing. So to pretend that this was uniquely horrific, that she was uniquely concerned about this and it was unlike anything ever before or since. I don't buy it entirely. 527 here on News Radio 92.3. We talk sometimes about the Supreme Court and some of the threats against them. Did you see that Justice Amy Coney Barrett had a swatting event take place at her house?
No.
Yeah, somebody called the law enforcement and said, there's been a shooting at so-and-so, you know, drive. And they show up and, you know, Supreme Court justices have security. Because ever since the threats against them from a few years ago with the Louisiana decision about abortion, right, and all that, they've all had security. So, you know, the cops show up and the security's there. And so, you know, security's like, what gives, brother? They're like, somebody said there's a shooting. I'm like, nope, pretty sure that's not happening. Oh, I guess this is a swatting call. Yep, sure enough is. But, you know, what if they hadn't had the security? You know? And then, by the way, they do a pretty good job of trying to protect these folks. But there was, you know, there were protests outside of the Supreme Court justices' houses, you know, actively criticizing them on their front lawn from the street, all this kind of stuff. And I thought, well, that's not really appropriate. There are laws about this, not as restrictive as sometimes you would like them to be, but there are laws. Anyway, meanwhile, Alabama has now appealed to the Supreme Court to overturn the overturn of their overturn of the overturn of their. Here's what you want to know. The districts in Alabama, are they drawn to give Alabama two majority-minority districts, two black congressmen, or are they drawn to give them one? The state has a map that they then revised with another map because the court told them to do it that would give one. Then The replacement map that's supposed to respect the orders of the court has two. Well, the Supreme Court decision in Calais seems to indicate that you cannot draw boundaries on the basis of race. The Court of Appeals has said, but they also said you can remediate super racist lines by having better lines drawn. And the state of Alabama says, but these are the right lines, you know? And so the Supreme Court has been asked to hear this case, which is not a surprise. I absolutely knew this was coming. And if the Supreme Court says, no, the Calais decision tells you you can't draw racial lines, then Alabama will go back to having a one black member district, likely. You never know. Elections have to actually happen. But they're already, you know, like, ballots have already been cast in the non-controversial districts. The controversial ones, remember, Kayavi pushed back the election date for this primary. Or the Supreme Court could decline to hear it, or the Supreme Court could say, no, y'all are a bunch of racists, you have to have two districts. We'll see. You ask me my bet? My bet is that they're going to say, well, did you not read the Calais decision? One, you cannot use race as a basis for drawing these districts except under very extraordinary circumstances, which are not true in this case. But, yeah, you know, that's kind of like the election. You got to actually run the election. You've got to actually have the Supreme Court vote if they even take the case.
Fox News, I'm CJ Pop. The framework for a potential deal between the U.S. and Iran, waiting for the green light from President Trump.
If a memorandum of understanding is approved, it would mean a 60-day ceasefire extension, the Strait of Hormuz reopened, and Iran committing to dropping any ambitions of possessing a nuclear weapon.
Ashley Webster of the Fox Business Network in Tel Aviv. An explosive-laden Russian drone slams into an apartment building in Romania today, injuring two people. Moscow was targeting a nearby Ukrainian port. NATO's leader Mark Rutte describing Russia's behavior as reckless and a danger to us all. New York City's first Muslim mayor, that's Zohran Mamdani, confirms he's not going to Sunday's Israel Day parade. He's the first mayor to skip the event since it started in 1964. Mamdani is a critic of Israel's government. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 5:31 at News Radio 92.3 right now. Partly cloudy skies. We've got 74 degrees, and we'll get a look at our forecast here in just a few minutes with Brooke Richardson and Channel 3. Well, Scambia County Sheriff Chip Simmons calling out an Alabama Police Department for what he's calling homeless dumping. Simmons posting a photo on Facebook showing an Orange Beach police officer dropping off a homeless man at a waterfront mission in Pensacola, handing him $20 and driving away. The sheriff says it's happened before and he's had enough.
Well, we're not going to allow you to just use Escambia County as a dumping ground for anything, anyone that you don't particularly want in your neighborhoods. We have a finite number of resources here in Escambia County, but we're not the clearinghouse for everyone's homeless.
Orange Beach Mayor Tony Cannon, though, pushing back on that, saying the homeless man asked to be brought to Pensacola, and his officer was just trying to help. The sheriff did release body cam footage that he said contradicted that claim. Now, State Representative Alex Andrade says he's really not sure how he's going to vote on Governor DeSantis' property tax elimination proposal when that special session begins next week. And, well, he says he's not even sure if the Senate has enough votes to pass it. Andrade says the rushed timeline and lack of detail really makes that a difficult decision.
I'm not sure if I'm going to vote for it or against it or what we're going to do, if we're going to change it or amend it. You know, I don't know what the Senate's going to do. I'd be curious to know individual senator by senator what their feelings are on this, because I'm not sure if the Senate has the votes to pass this right now.
Andrade says that proposal, which would begin raising the homestead exemption from $50,000 to $150,000 in 2027 before eventually fully eliminating property taxes, was only shared with legislators earlier, just a few days ago. And the special session begins June 1st, will run through June 3rd. And even if it does pass the legislature, that measure does still have to go to voters as a constitutional amendment requiring 60% voter approval in November. And of course, Andrade went into much more detail on that yesterday on Pensacola's Morning News. You can hear that full interview on the News Radio Facebook page. Bruce Woody is retiring today as executive director of the Emerald Coast Utilities Authority. He's closing out a 42-year career in utilities management. Woody says his time at ECUA has been a highlight of that career.
I've really enjoyed my time here. It's been a wonderful position to go out on a
end of a 42-year career, although only the last six here with ECUA, but I've really enjoyed it. It's been great.
And what he says, the highlights of his tenure at ECUA include the launch of the My ECUA app here in the last year and the continued progress on a new transfer station that would reduce truck traffic on Beulah Road. Don Palmer, a 26-year ECUA employee, will serve as the interim executive director while the board finalizes its search for a permanent replacement. Woody is relocating to Missouri to be closer to his family members. 534 News Radio 92.3. And let's get a look at our forecast from Channel 3 and Brooke Richardson.
We will be seeing a 60% chance of showers and thunderstorms, otherwise mostly cloudy skies, high near 83 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 74. For Saturday, 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms, high near 84 degrees. Saturday night, temperatures dropping near 73. Heading into Sunday, 50% chance of rain, high near 87. Sunday night, temperatures dropping near 75. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
And right now, partly cloudy, it is 74 degrees across the area. Our next news at 6, breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne, News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. NVIDIA has committed at least $6.5 billion into companies developing photonics technology in the past 3 months. Phototonic is an emerging technology considered to be more efficient compared to the current process of transferring data using electricity. UPMC finances held strong while Highmark started to bounce back from a tough 2025. That's according to first quarter earnings released this week by the Pittsburgh-based health insurers and hospital networks. UPMC made an operating profit of $261 million on $8.4 billion in revenue. Meanwhile, Highmark's operating profit was very similar, reaching $211 million on $8.3 billion in revenue. Blue Origin's New Glenn rocket exploded on a launch pad in Cape Canaveral, Florida, yesterday evening. No injuries were reported, and officials say the public was not at risk. NASA said it would assess the potential impacts of a plan to return American astronauts to the moon in 2028. Futures are slightly higher this morning. That's Your Money Now.
When you were 18, you spent your spring break in Cancun. The party was legendary, and you speak of it often, even though you don't remember half of it. The geeky kid who sat across from you in math class stayed home, practicing calculus. You made fun of her. A lot. That is, until last year, when you owed the IRS a lot of money and called the certified public accountants at Benakis & Associates. And she answered the phone. Who's laughing now? The number crunchers at Benakis & Associates live and breathe accounting and tax preparation. It's practically in their DNA. When you need to know what the heck a Form 656-PPV is, call Benakis & Associates. When you need a QuickBooks Pro advisor, call Benakis & Associates. When you need someone who practices long division for fun, call Benakis & Associates. Now in the historic district on 120 South Alkanes and online at flacpas.com. Benakis & Associates. Leave the numbers to the experts.
You recognize the smell of marijuana, but it's not just a smell. It's a warning. If you can smell it, harmful chemicals are entering your lungs, bloodstream, and brain, and our children too. Every inhale affects brain development and triples the risk of serious respiratory issues. Protect your kids and grandkids from the dangers of marijuana. Their future is on the line. This message is sponsored by the Department of Children and Families and the Florida Association of Broadcasters.
Andrew McKay in the Pensacola Morning News.
County Sheriff Chip Simmons is here in studio with me.
We get probably an accidental shooting probably once every 2 weeks, which is a lot.
How do you shoot two people cleaning your gun?
And if you're sitting next to each other kind of showing people how cool your gun is.
Yeah, I guess some people in an actual gunfight miss 10 times and one guy's cleaning and he shoots two people.
That's in the movies. They certainly miss them.
Andrew McKay in the Pensacola Morning News. Listen weekdays 5 to 9 a.m. News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
You know, if the members are supporting good policy,
then, you know, I see their budget items. That's just something you take into account. I mean, if they're being difficult on things that are important to our voters, because that's really the fight, is really who's going to represent the voters that we got elected to serve and who kind of is doing their own agenda. And Republicans get into trouble when they run on an agenda and then they go up and do different things than what they told. And I think we've seen that in different parts of the country. But so, like, I'm fighting, hey, we told our voters we're going to do this. We got to do it. There's resistance to that. That's just the nature of what you deal with. And so, fine, you know, we're not going to do this, we're not going to do that. Well, I am going to see that budget, and, you know, man, you know, yeah, there's that road. Oh, really? Okay, yeah, you need a road. Oh, I'm sure that's good. Oh, wait a minute. You know, where were you on our tort reform? Where were you on school choice? Oh, well, I don't know. You know, so you just do it, right?
So the governor, when he was speaking at the Federalist Society on Thursday, came right out in the open and said, yeah, I absolutely use the veto, the line item veto, to punish disobedient legislators. This didn't particularly come as news to us. It was just news that he would be willing to say it right out in the open. Joining us now, we have Alex Andrade, our state representative for District 2. Alex, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News. were you at all surprised that he actually said out loud the thing that we all have seen very specifically in connection to your budget items?
No, I mean, keep in mind, like, so last year, I had several things vetoed, but it wasn't even my most heavily vetoed budget year. Like, I still brought tens of millions of dollars back to Northwest Florida.
Right.
What was funny to me was how he said that was essentially like the circumstance where he would use it. In my circumstance, if he targeted me for personal reasons, it's because I brought to light and railed against fraud, waste, and abuse. You know what I mean? Like, I just called out the fact that, like, James Uthmeyer stole $10 million in Medicaid funds and funneled it to his PAC. So he doesn't just use it if you're not conservative. Sometimes he uses it if you're more conservative.
If you just don't do what he says. And I take that note. That's fair. I thought it was also kind of funny that this came right after comments about the importance of knowing your powers and the restrictions on your powers and the balance of powers and checks and balances. And I thought, okay. Anyway, I mentioned that in passing. I wanted to give you a chance to comment since that just had happened last week. And I still thought it was an amazing thing for him to say out loud. But as you say, not even only when it's a matter of policy disagreements. Let's talk about the property tax proposal. And let's, before we get into too much of it, let's get the details out. There's several parts of this. And I want, you and I have both read this, and you're the lawyer. I'm just the philosopher. Even you think there are things about this that are a little bit, it's unclear, right? There's things that you're not sure what they mean.
Yeah, I mean, remember, so he's been talking about property taxes for over a year now, and we've been asking, where's the plan, for over a year now. He finally put pen to paper and shared language with us that I received, I think, at like 4 p.m. yesterday afternoon. For the first time ever, he put pen to paper. And we're supposed to be voting on this stuff next week, June 1st through June 3rd. This is, I would say,
after having to review the budget this week for a vote on Friday, right?
Yeah, this is, I would say, not the best way to govern. Of course, you know, this, you know, pushing through some major policy that has dramatic effects on several layers of government, you know, it's a good idea for us not to actually vet it and go through a regular session. I mean, the Florida House tried to have a property tax discussion during regular session, and he insisted on it not being. In fact, the Florida House passed a proposal that eliminated all property taxes immediately on homestead property other than the school property tax, the property tax for public schools, and they refused to take it up. This one's obviously weaker than that in some respects, but it includes the school ad valorem tax as well, which will result in, you know, a dramatic cut to public schools across the state. You know, my, you know, rough math says like almost $40 million in Santa Rosa County, likely over $70 million in Escambia County being cut from our school district's budgets, like in the first year in 27 when it goes into effect.
Here's how I read it, and you tell me if I've got anything wrong. Starting in January of 2027, your homestead exemption would go to $150,000, whatever it is now. It's $50,000 now. It's the first 25 and then the third 25. And then you have the cap on the overall valuation based on the 3% per year for the Save Our Homes. This would put the entire homestead exemption immediately to $150,000. And then the following year in 2028 would go to $250,000. And then there's a provision for it to increase after that to the point where it eventually will be entirely eliminated, if I read it correct. But as you mentioned, one of the key features of this is it's no longer just the county slice or the city slice and the county slice. It's also the school board slice. So it would be defunding massive chunks from the counties, from the cities, and from the schools, right? Do I have that right?
Yes. And this proposal also has no protections on keeping law enforcement budgets at least at the same level they are today. So that had been in the House proposal, right?
You guys had that in there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it would still, you know, threaten, even our proposal would still threaten law enforcement budgets because, you know, keeping it stagnant this year, you know, going forward, saying you can't go below would still, you know, potentially threaten, you know, increases in law enforcement budgets every year.
Because if you don't have more money coming in, you can't afford a raise. You might not be able to lower it, but you also wouldn't probably be able to fund an increase, right?
Yeah, even our proposal, which protects law enforcement budgets better than this proposal, would still result in like the inability of law enforcement to hire new officers. You know, this one puts no parameters or protections in place for law enforcement agencies. It does allow for ad valorem taxes to be used to pay for law enforcement, but it says nothing about protecting their budgets. There's no discussion about an offset of this. There is a discussion about us setting up some type of a state fund, but we don't have the money in our state budget to supplement and offset local governments to this extent. So it's unclear to me what we'd be doing. And keep in mind, the governor proposing this is not going to be the governor having to address any unforeseen or foreseen problems that this referendum would create if it passed in, you know, part of our constitution. So we got a governor who is, you know, leaving office very soon, who will not be facing any of the consequences of, you know, this policy, who has a track record of already, I mean, he's leaving the next governor in a significant financial hole on so many other things. It's wild. This would just be another item on the list of things that you'd be leaving the next governor to have to deal with.
A couple of things that I thought were interesting about the proposal that we haven't mentioned yet. One is it only applies to people who have lived here for 5 years prior to the homestead exemptions. It's not clear to me whether, you know, like if you've lived here for 2 years, when this goes into effect, would you get the full thing or would you have to have been here for 5 years? But it's very clear that going forward, if you moved here, say, in 2028, you would not get this full homestead exemption until you've been here for 5 years. It would be some kind of a gradual. Is that right?
Yeah. You're right. Like people who have not lived here for 5 years as of today, I'm not 100% sure what they would qualify for every year. In 6 years, if this passed, someone who moved here would have to wait for 5 years to get the full benefit of the homestead tax exemption that this would put in place.
What about MSTUs and MSBUs? Because we have a lot of those here locally, and I couldn't tell from the proposal to what degree this affects it. I guess an MSBU might not be affected because that's not an ad valorem tax, but an MSTU certainly is, right?
The answer to that question is unknown. I gotta do some more research and talk to some more folks today.
Okay.
About it. Keep in mind, like I've had the benefit of looking at this on my phone so far. I will be getting to a computer very soon. I'll look at all the statutory references in the 11-page proposal and try and discern whether or not the statutory references tie into MSBUs and MSTUs. But okay. It's unclear to me right now. If they would or wouldn't apply.
I think there's also a provision in here that would reduce the cap on non-homestead properties increasing in value from 10% to 5%. So that's a, did you see that? I think that was also in there.
Yeah. So going forward, it looks like starting in, I think, 2028, they couldn't increase by that 10% valuation that they can right now.
Okay. But it sounds like your take on this is there's a lot of weird stuff in here. I'm not sure that it all makes sense. And we're going to be rushed to evaluate this out of the ordinary legislative process where you would have the committees and the testimony and the, you know, adjusting and the modifying and the amending. It's just going to be, hey, come and vote on this and, you know, good luck next week.
Yeah. And I mean, keep in mind when DeSantis was pushing this last year, not this legislative session, but last legislative session back in 2025, we put in $1 million to do a full-fledged analysis, to have a full understanding of all the financial impacts of a proposal like this, and the governor vetoed that money. He didn't want us to study this. He didn't want us to understand the downstream impacts. He didn't want us to understand the net effect to the state and local governments and all the services that we rely on. It's like he does not want folks to understand the impacts that this would have.
Do you think it's designed to fail?
I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know if it's designed to fail, if it's just some type of political stunt. I am 100% on with eliminating property taxes, but I'm not on board with us doing it without a full understanding of the financial impacts and what, you know, local governments can and can't sustain. I'd be perfectly happy if we had this conversation and also discussed offsets, revenue offsets, to try and lessen the impact. But I mean, $40 million hit or $35 million hit to Santa Rosa County's budget alone, the county commission's budget, that's a significant impact if their budget's around $280 million, you know,
you can't afford good roads now, right?
Right. And to now throw in school districts, which, you know, right, we haven't discussed before. By the way, we're constitutionally obligated to fund public school districts in Florida and to keep them at certain class sizes. You know, the teacher-student ratio is constitutionally required to be at certain levels, and it's the state that would have to pick up the tab based on the constitutional amendment. So where's the state going to come up with that money? We don't have the money to significantly offset those cuts to school districts' budgets. And there's no discussion or plan contemplated, and DeSantis has never talked about one. It's we need to be having adult conversations, and this whole process has been designed to prevent and eliminate adult conversations about the net effects of what this is going to do. So right now, like my issues are with the process and how this has been done. It's been done, you know, in the dark night. You know, he's withheld information intentionally. He's dropping this stuff in the last minute. We found out yesterday we were going to have a special session next Monday.
Yeah.
So I'm driving over to Tallahassee to present my healthcare budget tomorrow morning and pass the budget, and then going home on tomorrow night. And then I'll have to come back over on, I guess, Monday through Wednesday to take up this proposal, and you know, I'm not sure if I'm going to vote for it or against it, or what we're going to do, if we're going to change it or amend it. You know, I don't know what the Senate's going to do. I'd be curious to know individual senator by senator what their feelings are on this, because I'm not sure if the Senate has the votes to pass this right now.
Yeah, and of course, this would still be a constitutional amendment. We'd have to vote on it in the fall, even if it did pass, so 60% would have to approve it. But, and I, by the way, I forgot, I didn't even mention the part, there's a specific portion that says ad valorem taxes can only be spent on, and it gives a list of like six or eight things, and nothing else. So it's not a, there's no more provision for general spending with, you know, general fund revenue from ad valorem, except if it's on the list, like education, law enforcement, fire service, you know, roads, stormwater, natural resource projects. And I mean, that's kind of it and nothing else. I don't know what to make of it either. I have a lot of questions. I hope we have a good conversation about it next week. I know you're busy working on budgets. We didn't even get a chance to talk about that, and I kind of wanted to. You didn't realize you were signed up for your last year to be a full-time legislator, but look at you now. Alexandra.
You know, it's a blessing to do the job, Andrew. Yeah. I'm not complaining.
I know. Alex Andrade, he is our state representative for District 2 in his last year, term limited out. Alex, as always, thank you for the time. Thanks for helping me understand some of this stuff and keeping us informed. And good luck tomorrow and in Tallahassee next week as well.
Thank you, Andrew.
And, of course, that was yesterday, so all of those references to time are like today he's in Tallahassee. But, you know, the more I have thought about this, the more I think this was actually not a goof. I think this was hyper-strategic. Here's my theory. Remember we've been talking about how Governor DeSantis specifically bragged about how he uses the line item veto to keep legislators in line and to punish them if they dare to disagree with him on policies and, as Alex pointed out, even on other things. And you say, well, why are we having this budget thing today? And then on Monday, we're supposed to have this special session where we haven't had any real conversations about any of the parameters of this. We're just going to vote it out in 3 days. Okay, that's either very, very stupid or very, very savvy. Because now that the, you know, governor waited until the budget had been done and was in its 72-hour cooling period before he announced a special session on property taxes for immediately, meaning it's going to fall during his veto period. So he can very specifically say, oh, you want all your budgetary stuff done? Guess what you better do Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday on property taxes, because otherwise I'll line item veto your butt. I mean, it's not even a speculation. That looks so blatantly obvious. And so you've got, for example, Senator Gates comes out and says, you know, look at all the projects. I'm on board with this. And Michelle Salzman comes out with that same, you know, they're not saying we're doing it because of this. I think they both support the plan. But there's definitely a connection between, look at all the local projects I'm going to get. And, you know, next week I'll vote for property taxes. It's cool. This is terrible, terrible policymaking. And again, just for those of you who might be new to the show, this comes from a guy who I have spent my life complaining about property taxes, that I do think they're unfair, unjust, and not right. But tell me how you keep local governments going if they don't have property taxes. And I'm willing to find a different way to pay. I'm willing to talk about all that, but there's no such conversation or of the implications, as you heard Alex talking about. 556 on News Radio 92.3. If you're thinking about buying or selling a home, Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty are super good at this. And, you know, one of the things, when you sell a couple hundred homes a year, you know, it was over 200 for a couple of years, and then it was 175 and then 165 because the market got much harder, and then back up to 209 last year. That's a lot of experience. And that means a lot of very particular details that you know how to spot and fix if other people might not see them. Things like, you know, a home's not selling. Well, what paint is? She was talking about this yesterday in Pep Talk. Well, the yellow paint. Well, that's a normal coastal color. Let's just make it an off shade of white. Sells like within 2 weeks. It's stuff you might not see, but a trained eye, just like in your business, your profession, or anything that you do, you learn over time how to spot the things that just aren't quite right. Well, in selling a lot of homes, you learn to spot the things that aren't quite right. And you be militant about follow-up and finding out information. Why didn't you make an offer on that house? Anyway, all of that stuff contributes to a great end result of getting all the way to closing for the best possible deal buying or selling a home. 786-3996 for Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty.
Whether you want to start your education or advance your career, Pensacola State College is the place for you. Join the 91% of PSC students who graduate loan-free and select from over 100 programs, ranging from career certificates to baccalaureate degrees. In addition, Pensacola State has over 300 scholarships to choose from, including cybersecurity. Register today for the summer and fall semester. Go to pensacolastate.edu. That's pensacolastate.edu to learn more.
Delicious seafood is what you'll find at Davis Catfish House. Davis Catfish serves only the best Mississippi catfish, fresh Gulf seafood, and delicious homemade sides. Weekday specials include 2 times Tuesday, 6 free shrimp added to the 6-piece dinner. Wednesdays offer lunch basket specials. And everybody's favorite, Shrimptastic Thursday, $5 off all you can eat shrimp. Serving fresh seafood daily, visit David's Catfish House on Dogwood Drive in Milton. See you at David's.
As a small business owner, what keeps you up at night? Just knowing if your email got hacked or your phone system went down, it could cost you thousands in revenue, as well as your reputation. That's where Data Revolution comes in, with their unique position to take care of you and your business IT support, phone systems, cybersecurity, and more. Secure it and sleep better at night by going to datarevs.com. Winner of the 2021 Best of the Bay for IT support, datarevs.com.
Pensacola's hurricane coverage headquarters is News Radio 92.3. With wall-to-wall coverage before, during, and after storms.
Anyone who's an enemy of evil is a friend of mine.
Mandingo, how I grok your mouth music.
Patrick Warburton as the Tick was one of the all-time best casting decisions ever. He was so pitch perfect in that. Oh, did you see what we might be getting now? A brand new bill? You know, we're getting all these new coins. Like, they've got the 250-year coin, what they're calling the, what is it? It's the semi-pentacentennial or quincentennial, I think they're calling, which is half of 500. Now we might get a Trump $250 bill. You say, who's ever needed a $250 bill? It's the 250th anniversary, see? They would have to change law to allow a sitting, living person on the bill, though. You're listening.